Barker, Barnhart, Berger, Beyer, Bonamici, Boone, Boquist, Bruin, Buckley, Burley, Butler, Cameron, Cannon, Clem, Cowan, Dallum, Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Galizio, Gerard, Gilzer, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Hannah, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker, excused, Bruin, Gelser, Hunt, Maurer, Nelson, Scott. The flag salute will be led by Representative Susan Morgan.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The opening ceremony will be presented by Portland State University opera singers Allison Armerding, Jim Rose, and Anna Weimeister, accompanied by Janet Coleman at the piano, and they are sponsored by Representative Mary Nolan.
Good morning, everyone. We're representatives of Portland State University. Portland State University Opera has been nationally ranked as the number one collegiate opera by the National Opera Association at least twice within the past 5 years. We stage a fully produced opera annually in Lincoln Hall on the PSU campus. This year's opera will be Mozart's Così fan tutte, and will open on Friday, April 27th, and we invite you all to join us for a performance. A postcard with performance information has been mailed to each of you. Today, we'll be seeing a selection from Così fan tutte, the trio Soave si Advento, and we hope you enjoy.
Courtesies, Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I am a PSU alumna. I graduated in fine art, painting, and in psychology. That's why I'm here. I'm so proud of these excellent performers. And I want to remind you that if you haven't heard already, these world-class students practice and perform in Lincoln Hall, which, if you haven't heard already, is slated for major renovation in the governor's budget. Lincoln Hall was given to PSU when Portland Schools built the new Lincoln High School 25 years ago. The building is in dire need of seismic upgrading and repair. The roof has been patched so often that it sinks when you walk on it. So let's see if we can find some help for these people in this year and restore Lincoln Hall to its original grandeur. Don't you think these talented people deserve it? And I fully expect the next time I visit Milan, I'll hear one of them either in the side aisle, from the side aisle, because I won't be able to afford the big seats at La Scala. So thank you very much for indulging me for my alma mater. Thanks.
Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like to introduce an honorary page today, Mackenzie Lang. Mackenzie, if you could please stand for a moment. Mackenzie is the daughter of Lad Lang. She's 14, attends Kelly Middle School, is in the eighth grade, enjoys numerous sports, and her career aspiration is to be an attorney and or a judge. So, thank you.
Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise today to extend courtesies to three students joining us from Kelly Middle School in Eugene as honorary pages. Would you please stand, Eric, Chloe, and Tyler? Chloe Pegtall is engaged in soccer, basketball, and track and has a career goal of anesthesiologist. Tyler Wagner, involved in basketball, soccer, baseball, and reading, has an ambition of being a sports journalist or sports announcer. And Eric Larson, who is involved in football, reading, camping, cooking, soccer, and world politics, would like to be an architectural engineer and writer. Welcome to the Capitol, all of you. Thank you.
And I have the privilege of introducing, on behalf of Representative Wayne Scott, a couple of pages. If Morgan Christensen would stand. She is from Canby. She is the daughter of Judy Christensen, age 15, and she's a sophomore at the high school. And her interests are specifically as class officer and model United Nations, with career goals of studying law and going into politics. So we're delighted to have you this morning, Morgan. And I'd also like to introduce Hannah Barton, also from Canby. And she is age 16, also a sophomore, and she is involved in student government, speech, and the Thespian Society, and has goals of becoming a teacher or participating in children's ministry. So delighted to have both of you. Thank you. Are there other courtesies this morning? Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President from the Senate to pass Senate Bill 596, 946, 491, adopted SJM 12, SJR 24, and 26. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President from the Senate to sign Senate Bills 270, 362, and 5502.
First reading, memorials and resolutions.
SJM 23, urging Congress to reauthorize state children's health insurance program. SJM 12, urging Congress to amend the Child Left Behind Act of 2001 to provide for waiver and adequate federal funding. SGR 24, recognizing the importance of healthcare workforce in Oregon. SGR 26, encouraging Oregonians to participate in events planned for Portland Rose Festival Centennial Celebration 2007.
Measures read first time or pass the Speaker's desk for referral. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Special orders of business. Clerk will read the resolution.
HCR 7, in memoriam, Doreen Margolin, 1947 to 2007.
Question now arises upon final reading and adoption of House Concurrent Resolution Number 7. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker and colleagues. This one may be a little hard for me to get through, so I'm going to ask for your help. In the early 1960s, women still went to college to get their MRS degree, And certainly, that's what many a proper young woman on the East Coast did. And so it was, I am told, that Doreen Stam of Brooklyn attended New York University in pursuit of a bit of higher education, a bit of adventure, and perhaps a wedding ring. It was, after all, what was done. But even then, there was something trailblazing, noteworthy, and refreshingly maverick about Doreen. She didn't choose to study comparative lit or home economics. No, not for Doreen. She would shake things up a bit and pursue a degree in math. Having myself taken an undergraduate degree in math a few years later, also at an East Coast school, I can tell you this for sure. The mathematics department at NYU was not accustomed to hosting women students, especially women who knew how the world ought to be and were determined to take their place front and center in it. I can only imagine how Doreen turned heads and turned that place upside down. NYU changed Doreen, and in return for that, Doreen has helped to change our community here in Oregon much for the better. First of all, at NYU, Doreen met a nice guy named Phil, a law student who wasn't intimidated by a woman who was mastering math. Phil was smart enough, and he tells me smitten enough, to see the treasure that Doreen was. And together they began a remarkable partnership, an enduring commitment to family, community, education, and giving back. Doreen married Phil Margolin in 1968 while she was still an undergraduate. Phil then accepted a clerkship at the Oregon Court of Appeals, and after she graduated, they headed west together. She entered what was at that time the cutting-edge profession of computer programming, and the two of them commenced to take on the world. The tenderness that permeated their 38-year marriage was an inspiration to everyone who was lucky enough to get to know them. Doreen loved the idea of being a mother, and she loved being a mother. She decided to take a break from her professional work when their son Daniel was born, so that she could really get to know this little person. But she and Phil later decided together that they could take care of Daniel and keep their family moving ahead while Doreen went back to school, this time in pursuit of a law degree. She applied to what has become the Lewis and Clark Law School and was accepted. The same week, she learned she was pregnant again, and she asked the law school if she could just defer admission for a year, a fairly common practice these days. But the reply came back, "Sorry, we're happy to let you in, young lady, but don't push your luck or our patience. Take the offer now or take your chances later." The two of them, Phil and Doreen, sat down together and figured out how they could do this. Phil was willing to share the household chores and some family duties, and he tells me that he thought at the time, well, we'll kind of piece it together and she can scrape by and just barely get her degree, but at least she'll have her license to practice law. Doreen had other plans. She was not scraping by on anything. She enrolled in the fall, delivered her second child, Amy, during her first year in law school, and went on to graduate with honors in the top 10 of her class. It is exactly that quiet, steady determination and seemingly endless grace that marks the life of this wonderful woman. I had the privilege, honor, and pleasure of serving with Doreen for many years on the board of the Women's Investment Network PAC. She had uncanny instincts for people, and she had an enviable knack for cutting straight to the heart of the matter. Often with a dry wit that had all the heads in the room nodding and the faces smiling. Doreen regularly brought out inspired work from everyone who sat on a committee with her or worked on a project with her. She had a quiet persistence that let you know great things were about to happen. She was sure you could achieve great things. And you dare not let her down. Colleagues, it is hard to imagine a better example of leadership than Doreen Margolin.
Further discussion, Representative Galizio.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wanted to thank the representative from Southwest Portland, and I'm speaking today on behalf of many people at the Portland Community College. To the resolution. I teach at Portland Community College, and Doreen was an enormous presence, and I wanted to also acknowledge my colleague Michael Dembro from the English Department and the Faculty Federation, who helped craft some words for today, but I wanted to speak to Doreen in terms of the Portland Community College. And as the representative from Southwest Portland said, with the premature passing of Doreen, this state has truly suffered an enormous loss. Doreen was all about civic service. And both in her law practice and in her volunteer work for Oregon's community colleges. She was one of the first members of the Portland Community College Foundation during the early 1990s, and she eventually served as the foundation's chair. The foundation's primary purpose is to provide scholarships that make higher education accessible to students and potential students who otherwise couldn't dream of going to college. And this was truly Doreen's passion. When a seat on the PCC board unexpectedly opened up in 1999, she volunteered to fill that vacancy. She was subsequently elected to the seat in 2001 and reelected in 2005. She served twice as the chair of the board. From the moment that she joined the board, Doreen had a huge impact on it. She had a great sense of humor and knew how to ask probing questions, the ones that needed to be asked. She could be maddeningly opinionated, but she was always forthright and convincing in her opinions. She earned and retained the respect and admiration of all sectors of the college's staff. And almost from the beginning, her contributions transcended the confines of the PCC district. She understood that no college exists in isolation and that Oregon students are best served when the colleges work together in a coordinated fashion. She therefore became very active in the statewide Community College Association of Oregon. She chaired that from 2000 to 2002, and she really helped to shepherd in a new era of cooperation and vision. Doreen also then took her abilities to the national level. She was elected to the Association of Community College Trustees in 2003. She served on the association's finance and governance committees. So in the world of community colleges, Doreen Margolin really helped put Oregon on the map. And all of this, of course, was done without pay, just out of a sense of service and a belief in the way that higher education can really transform an individual and a state. The people of this state, I think, owe this wonderful woman a great deal. And Doreen Margolin came as from New York City, as the representative from Southwest Portland said, and her wonderful accent really never let us forget that. She came to embody the best of Oregon. So please join me in extending the legislature's profound sense of appreciation to Doreen, to her husband Phil, and to her children. And I just wanted to point out something else that I just became aware of. There is the Portland Community College Foundation has received an initial gift of $40,000 to establish a fund to help single mothers earn an education. So the Doreen Margolin Memorial Scholarship Fund will create an award to benefit PCC students who are single mothers and enrolled in professional, technical, and transfer degree programs. So I think it's a very fitting tribute to a great woman. Thank you.
Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the resolution.
To the resolution.
I will be brief, and I did not know Doreen very long, but I did want to say a few words. I had the pleasure of serving with Doreen on the Women's Investment Network PAC, which is a political action campaign committee to help women, pro-choice Democratic women, get elected to office. And I feel that Doreen's role on the board is one of the reasons I'm here. And, well, like I said, I didn't know her long. I immediately liked this woman for her humor, her incredibly sharp intelligence, and her dry wit and look at the world. And she will definitely be missed. As you heard, her commitment to community colleges is evidence of her commitment to creating opportunity for very many people. And I think her commitment to bringing more women into elected office is testament to that. And her guidance and her dedication to this state will be very much missed. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the resolution.
To the resolution.
Colleagues, I, like Representative Kotek, did not know Doreen for too long before her untimely death, but I'm so honored to have had the opportunity to have some time with her. We were on a flight together. She was going to Chicago and I was going back east. And Doreen was the type of person who you could just have a conversation with and go on and on and on, and we were standing in the back of the plane forever. I think they had to tell us to take our seats. We had a lot of things in common, both lawyers with lawyer husbands, two children, and she was just the kind of person who was so intelligent and bright, she could light up a room. The last time I saw Doreen, she was with Phil at an event in Portland. And we had a very long conversation, which most people would have absolutely no interest in, because it was about the benefits of chess for elementary school students. And Doreen and Phil and I stood there for a very long time talking in detail about how important it is for children to learn how to play chess, because Phil and his family were very instrumental in setting up a program called Chess for Success in Portland. And what we were talking about was the effects on children and their education, the effects on children who play chess. And colleagues, today in the Oregonian, coincidentally perhaps, there's an editorial about the results that were released by the Northwest Regional Education Laboratory about how students participating, and this is in 64 Title I schools throughout Oregon, how it's helping them increase their scores in both math and reading and helping children to be more successful. And to see that in the paper today, knowing that that was what we were talking about the last time I saw her, it just goes to show how much Doreen and her family did in so many different ways for so many different people in this state. So thank you so much to the representative from Southwest Portland for bringing this resolution, and I'm honored to support this and recognize this wonderful woman. Thank you.
Further discussion of the resolution? Seeing none, Representative Nolan, do you wish to close?
Just briefly, Mr. Speaker. And that is, I would like to honor members of Doreen's family who are here today to allow us to thank them for sharing her with us. Her parents, Norm and Helen Stamm, her daughter, Amy, and her husband, Andy Rome. I don't know if her son, Daniel, and his wife, Chris, made it, but their daughter, Doreen's granddaughter, Marissa, and, of course, her husband, Phil. And then just one final comment. The resolution we are considering sums it all up better than I am able to. Whereas Doreen Margolin was devoted to making Oregon a better place for all Oregonians, but especially for those who were disadvantaged, and through higher education wished to participate more fully in the American and the Oregon dream, please join me as members of the 74th Legislative Assembly to recognize and express our appreciation for Doreen Margolin's outstanding service and numerous achievements throughout her life on behalf of community colleges, the disadvantaged, and the people in the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion the resolution should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Cannon, how do you vote? He votes aye. Before I announce the vote, I would like to invite the family to come to the bar. And I would like to thank all of you for sharing Doreen with the state of Oregon in all the various ways that she was involved. House Concurrent Resolution 7, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Propositions and motions. Representative Barnhart.
Mr. Speaker, I request a recess for Democratic Caucus, I think about 15 minutes.
Representative Barnhart asks unanimous consent for a recess for purpose of Democratic Caucus. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Republicans will meet for 15 or 20 minutes in the Republican Caucus office.
Parallel request by Representative Hanna. Without objection, we're in recess for 15 minutes. Also come to order, and the clerk will call the roll.
Barker, Barnhart, Berger, Berger-Bayer, Bonamici, Boone, Boquist, Boquist-Bruin, Buckley, Burley, Burley Butler, Cameron, Cameron Cannon, Clem, Cowan, Dallum, Dallum Dingfelder, Dingfelder Chris Edwards, Chris Edwards David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Flores Galizio, Gerard, Gilzer, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Greenlick Hannah, Holvey, Holvey Hunt, Jensen, Comp, Comp Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Crummel Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker, not answering, Berger, Burley, Cameron, Chris Edwards, Flores, Greenlick, Holvey, Comp, Crummel, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, excused, Bruin, Gelser, Hunt, Maurer, Nelson, Scott.
Representative Minnis, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. Speaker, I ask for unanimous consent to return to the orders of courtesy.
Representative Minnis asks for unanimous consent to return to courtesies. Is there an objection? Hearing none, please go ahead.
Colleagues, please join me in welcoming to our chamber Norm Eder, who's sitting up in the balcony here. He's the Executive Director of Manufacturing 21 Coalition. Manufacturing 21 is made up of manufacturers throughout Oregon who are working to resolve workforce shortage and other issues that stymie the prosperity of a diversified economy in our state. Manufacturing 21 forecasts that we will lose 50,000 to 60,000 skilled workers in Oregon over the next 10 years due to retirements and migration. While the majority of them will be from the Portland metropolitan area, the economy of the entire state could be impacted if we don't get proactive about training. Norm Eder is here with partners from Mount Hood Community College to try to impress upon us how essential it is for us to invest in our community colleges. While colleges, including Mount Hood, are moving to reform their manufacturing curriculum, adding additional staff for such an endeavor is a challenge. Please extend the courtesies of our chamber to Norm and his community college partners. There's also some students joining him as well this morning. Please welcome. We're glad to have you this morning.
I'm so glad you can be here with us. Welcome. Further courtesies? First reading of House bills.
House Bill 3545 relating to reduction of greenhouse gases. House Bill 3546 relating to extension of time for review for demands for compensation by reasons of land use regulations, property demanding, declaring an emergency.
Bills read first time or passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 2104 relating to reporting requirements for certain unclaimed property. House Bill 2125 relating to changes in child support program in response to changes in federal law and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2472 relating to commuter rail. House Bill 2572 relating to medical devices. House Bill 3164 relating to hunting on public lands. House Bill 3482 relating to Oregon Facilities Authority and declaring an emergency.
Bills read second timer. Passed to third reading. Consent calendar. Third reading of House bills. Clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2074 relating to landscaping.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2074A. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2074A comes from the Business and Labor Committee with a unanimous due pass. It will help ensure that landscaping business owners have adequate training regarding the laws that govern landscape work in Oregon. Currently, landscaping business owners are not required to demonstrate any knowledge regarding the laws around their business in Oregon and their obligations to their customers and to the law. And business owners who don't understand this risk running into consumer problems and legal trouble. This bill will correct this issue. It will require that all owners of a landscaping business who are not licensed landscape contractors, who already know this thing, that they have to pass an exam. It's either the owner or a managing employee. Sometimes owners of these businesses are not directly connected and doing the work of the business. So either the owner or the managing employee must take the examination. The Landscape Contractors Board administer the courses and the examination. The board may use an outside source to administer the classes and the test. And it's similar to what is currently done by a CCB, Construction Contractors Board. It requires the board to consider the availability of courses throughout Oregon and utilize technology to make courses widely available to licensed applicants, even if they aren't in the convenient Mid-Valley areas. It's a good bill. It's both helps them make sure that their businesses know what their responsibilities are, ensures the consumers that they have this minimum knowledge, but doesn't require them to go through the full licensing as landscape contractors. Good bill. Urge an aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Berger, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Madam Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Votes aye. All members have voted. House Bill 2074A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2219, related to administration of building trade licensing programs.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2219A. Representative Esquivel.
Colleagues, House Bill 2219 in Groves comes to you from the Business and Labor. The Building Codes Division administrators and enforces Oregon's statewide building codes. In addition to code adoption and enforcement of the Building Codes Division, issues about 89 different licenses to individuals working in the electrical, elevator, plumbing, and boiler trades. HB 2219 is a follow-up of 2181, which was passed last session. 2181, which was passed last session, was a regulatory streamlining bill that provided consistency among the licensed construction trade and made it easier for business and individuals to renew and maintain their licenses. House Bill 2181, which was passed last session, allowed for greater flexibility for businesses and individuals to renew their licenses by giving people more choices and providing greater consistency. HB 2219 follows up on 2181 by removing additional administrative requirements from statute and clarifying language relating to license fees. HB 2219 creates consistent application terminology for application fees and terms among construction trade type licenses. HB 2219 clarifies that fees are based on a yearly basis, which allows for a longer license term, but does not increase the fees. HB 2219 provides for a special exam fee for the electrical program to make electrical program consistent with other programs. This bill would allow full implementation of consistency and streamlining measures for all licenses and provide for consistent exam and continuing education requirements, which will make it easier for licensees to work through the regulatory process in the state of Oregon. I urge your aye vote.
Seeing no one further in the queue, Representative Esquivel, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Riley, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Richardson, votes aye. Representative Esquivel, how do you vote? Votes aye. All members have voted. House Bill 2219A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2390, relating to registration plates for Congressional Medal of Honor recipients.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2390A. Representative Esquivel.
Colleagues, it's kind of mixed emotions being here today on this issue. The state of Oregon, or let's just take it the United States, there are 111 Congressional Medal of Honor winners alive in the United States today. There is one in the state of Oregon. This individual has tried to get license plates from the Department of Motor Vehicles for quite some time, about 55 years. We have opened up an avenue through good work between the Speaker and the Department of Motor Vehicles, but I want to give you some past history on why this individual is such an honored hero. His name's Bob Maxwell. He lives in Bend. Bob first saw combat in Sicily on the invasion of Anzio in Italy. He was injured in the Anzio Landing and was treated by an Army field hospital. For his valor, he was awarded the Silver Star and a Purple Heart. Then in 1944, on September 7th, about 2 a.m., his command post was surrounded by a German and an all-out assault by German ground troops. They used heavy automatic weapons, including hand grenades, while Bob and three other defenders returned fire in the dark with their .45 pistols and held them off. Several hand grenades hit the fence and bounced harmlessly outside. One grenade landed in their midst. Knowing that time was short and not being able to locate the grenade, Bob threw himself on the grenade to shield the blast from his three fellow infantrymen. The blast severely injured Bob's leg, foot, and left temple. Bob was treated in the aid station and medically evacuated to the United States for medical treatment in Denver. That's when he learned that he was awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor for his valor. The citation for the Medal of Honor was signed by President Roosevelt and was still left on his desk when President Roosevelt passed away. For his valor, General Danielson presented Bob with the Medal of Honor. Later, Bob was presented with a second Silver Star, a Bronze Star, a second Purple Heart, and a French Coup de Grace. 60 years later, he was presented with the French Legion of Honor, which is the equivalent to the Medal of Honor by the French. Bob is also one of the 5,000 in 1970 educators in the United States that was tabbed as such. He's been a great asset for this state. It is time for us to recognize this individual. The physical impact on this started out, believe it or not, at $18,000. He also had to agree to purchase 500 sets of plates per year. Well, that's not feasible. But through the help of the Speaker, Representative Merkley, we have this down to where there's really no physical impact at all. We're going to recognize the Congressional Medal of Honor plates through the DMV, and it will be a personalized plate, and we're probably talking $55. So I encourage an aye vote on this, and it's time that we recognized our real hero in the state of Oregon.
Further discussion, Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Honorable colleagues, I want to salute the representative from Medford, the good representative from Medford, for his work on this. We tried unsuccessfully last year, and his leadership and hard work brought this bill to us today to vote. Representative Burley and I are honored to know Bob Maxwell, a very deserving, a very humble man, and this will be a great acknowledgement of his bravery. So both Representative Burley and I on behalf of Bob Maxwell, would ask your vote for this, and again salute the good effort of the representative from Medford.
Further discussion, Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I too would like to salute my colleague from Medford, who's been relentless on this to make sure it got done. I express my thanks to the Speaker as well, and I also have to acknowledge the Chair of our Transportation Committee, who really does not like license plates bills. She really does not like them, but with her patience and her cooperation, we're able to listen to this bill and move it through the process, and I'm grateful for that. And I urge an aye vote on this bill. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Esquivel, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. All members have voted. House Bill 2398, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2902, relating to penalties for violations of maximum weight requirements.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2902A. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2902A has been basically replaced. It replaces the original bill, and let me just give you some background. Under Oregon law, trucks which weigh 80,000 pounds can travel on the highway without additional authority, and the weight limit for trucks in Oregon for standard weight limits for these long-haul rigs is 80,000 to 105.5 in total pound weight. In order to travel or drive in a truck of over 80,000 pounds, you've got to have a permit. The permit costs $8. And up to this particular time, if you are overweight and for whatever reason cannot produce that $8 permit, that is overweight, over 80,000 pounds but less than 105,500 pounds, the fine in the past has been calculated based upon a fine per pound up to a total fine of $6,120. And this is an issue in agriculture. It's an issue when you are loading trucks and moving trucks without the benefit of scales. And so what this bill does is it says that the it makes a Class A traffic violation out of an overweight. Again, this does not allow them to exceed the 105.5, but it does say that it makes it a Class A traffic violation with a total penalty of $495. The Oregon Truck Association believes $495 is the more proportionate penalty for a violation for a failure to obtain the $8 permit. So I am encouraged your aye vote, and this came out unanimously out of the Transportation Committee.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Butler, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Shields, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Riley votes aye. Representative Minnis, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Greg Smith, how do you vote? Votes aye. All members have voted. House Bill 2902A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. The clerk will read the memorial.
HGM 14, urging Congress to enact a National Guard and Reserve Retirement Act.
The question now arises upon third reading and final adoption of House Joint Memorial 14. Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. House Joint Memorial 14 comes from our House Veterans Affairs Committee, and it's a simple memorial. It simply urges Congress to enact National Guard and Reserve Retirement Act that provides for National Guard and Reserve members who attain 30 years of service or 55 years of age to immediately retire, receive military retiree pay. The role of the National Guard has changed, obviously. Their mission has changed, and this is a timely act to take. I urge your vote. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Richardson.
Madam Speaker, colleagues, I stand in opposition to this bill, which is something you wouldn't normally expect on this kind of a bill. But as a veteran, I feel that I ought to stand up and say that it makes no sense for us to be trying to tell Washington, D.C. that reservists who can retire at 60 should be able to retire with full benefits at 55, when in our own state we're telling PERS recipients that instead of being able to retire at 55 or 57, they should retire at 60 or 65. And I have tremendous respect for other veterans. I'm a veteran myself. I have tremendous respect for those that have put themselves in harm's way. I had the opportunity to do that as well. But this is about a policy decision as to whether it's appropriate to lower retirement benefits age from 60 to 55 in a time when retirement means retirement and not just additional second income or deferred compensation. People are living longer, we're working longer, we're grateful for the service of all of us that have served, but that's because we love our country and we do our duty, not because we have expectations of lowering retirement age from 60 to 55.
Further discussion, Representative Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Whatever we call it here. Colleagues, let me make a point of clarification here. This particular piece of legislation that's been sitting around for 5 or 6 years in the federal Congress has to do with the retirement of Reserve and National Guard personnel. And under the federal statutes, even in a time of war, they're forced to retire by the age of 55. And then they don't get any money until they're 60, 62. So they got to get out at 55. They got to go find a job somewhere and continue their career path. You know how easy it is to get a job at 55. Another good carrier could talk about this. So then we turn around and say, if you live to 60 or 62 right now, depending on where you fit in the category, then you can get your full retirement. And your full retirement from these people, it's somewhere around $700 or $800 a month. Let's not mince words here. I hear people say, "Oh, you guys go into military and you get a free ride." That's a friggin' lie. And so what we're talking about here is individuals who have spent 30 years of service, get out, now got to continue in a job for at least another 5 to 7 years. And then, if they've lived, and then the federal government hasn't burnt down 3 buildings and lost their paperwork, and you got to prove it 7 years later, after you got out, that all your paperwork's there. So as I told all my young soldiers, I don't care who gave you the Mother May I note, keep it for 35 years, because you'll need it later in life. And that's what this is about. I mean, it's a federal issue, yes, but what we're trying to do is prod the Congress to make a decision. And I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? See no one further in the queue. Representative Richardson, I'll call on you for a second time.
Thank you. Colleagues, I was not aware that there was a mandatory retirement age at 55. So that's news to me. Also, to say 62 when the bill says 60 is to kind of stretch things, but still, 5 years is 5 years. And so I appreciate the information that I've been provided and will change my vote to an aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Schaffler, do you wish to close?
I urge your aye vote, Madam Speaker. Thank you.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the memorial should be adopted will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Witt, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Votes aye. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Jensen, apparently you were off the floor. House Joint Memorial 14, having received the constitutional majority, is declared adopted. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 491, relating to insurance coverage of bilateral collateral implants. Senate Bill 596, relating to emergent small business enterprises. Senate Bill 946, relating to leave for work for victims of crime, certain crime victims, and declaring an emergency.
Bills read first time or passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills. Third reading of Senate bills. Clerk will read the first bill.
Senate Bill 5503, relating to financial administration of the Commission for the Blind, appropriating money and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 5503A. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Senate Bill 5503 is a budget bill for the Commission on the Blind. The agency provides rehabilitation services to legally blind Oregonians who want to be employed or live independently in their communities. The agency is funded primarily with federal funds. Other fund sources include a contract with Multnomah County, interagency agreements, and donations. The agency's general fund is used exclusively to match the federal funds. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means approved the total budget of $15.3 million and 44.24 full-time equivalent positions. Federal funds represent 74% of the total. The general fund portion of the $1.5 million is $250,000 greater than the essential budget level. The approved budget expands access to services by adding three instructor positions, restores general fund support eliminated in 2003, and carries forward federal fund expenditure limitation to complete the Portland facility renovation project. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of Senate Bill 5503 as amended.
Further discussion? Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd like to declare a potential conflict, please.
Please state your conflict.
Madam Speaker, I'm a member of a limited liability corporation that does business with Commission for the Blind.
Representative Hanna declares a potential conflict of interest. It shall be noted for the record. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Wish to declare a conflict of interest.
Please state your conflict.
A member of a limited liability company that has a contract with the Commission of the Blind.
Representative Cameron declares a potential conflict of interest. It shall be noted. See no one further in the queue. Representative Boone, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Boquist votes aye. Representative Minnis, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Kremel, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Flores, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Dallum, how do you vote? Votes aye. And Representative Berger, you are in the queue. For what purpose do you rise?
Madam Speaker, wish to change my vote from aye to yea. I mean from no to yea.
Representative Berger changes her vote from aye to no, from no to aye. Representative Olson, for what purpose do you rise?
Madam Speaker, I'd like to change my vote also to aye from no.
From aye to no?
From
no,
to,
no
aye.
To aye. Representative Olson changes his vote from no to aye. Is there anyone further wishes to be recognized? Senate Bill 5503A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 5538, relating to the Financial Administration of the Oregon Racing Commission, and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 5538A, Representative Shields.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 5538 is the budget bill for the Oregon Racing Commission. The Racing Commission regulates all aspects of racing in Oregon, including live and simulcast horse and greyhound race meets, off-track betting facilities, and wagering through seven interstate wagering hubs that are located in Oregon. Commission revenues are received from the state share of parimutuel receipts from the race meets and the hubs, from licenses and fees, and from unclaimed winnings. By law, the commission is to transfer revenue in excess of expenditures to the general fund. In addition, the commission regulates multi-jurisdictional wagering hubs located within the state. Up to 0.25% of 1% of all hub wagers are collected by the agency, with one-third going to the general fund and two-thirds going to the racing development fund. That 0.25% of 1% rate is set by the Racing Commission. The recommended budget totals $5,664,272 other funds and 14.52 FTE. The budget includes the addition of veterinary staff to assist with increased medical testing and oversight of horse races. The budget was increased $960,000 other funds for payments to benefit the Oregon parimutuel racing industry from hub revenue and anticipates an additional $480,000 being transferred to the general fund above what was assumed in the governor's proposed budget. Madam Speaker, the Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of Senate Bill 5538 as amended.
Further discussion? Seeing no one further in the queue, Representative Shields, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Schaffler, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative Lim, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Krieger, how do you vote? Votes aye. All members have voted. Senate Bill 5538A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 5546, relating to State Financial Administration, declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 5546A, Representative Dingfelder.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Senate Bill 5546A provides capital construction adjustments for three agencies. A new $4.1 million of other funds capital construction expenditure limitation is established for the Department of Administrative Services for the renovation of the Eugene State Office Building. After remodeling the building for necessary safety and other upgrades, the Regional Office of the Department of Environmental Quality will leave private lease space and move into the renovated building. Expenditure limitations in the amount of $2 million other funds and $750,000 in federal funds for the Military Department's Salem Mail Distribution Facility are eliminated. The project was approved in 2005, but will now be undertaken. The ending date for the capital construction other funds expenditure limitation for the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training New Salem Training Facility is extended by 1 year to June 30, 2008. The extension will allow the agency to complete some remaining construction issues with contractors. The action does not change the overall amount of the limitation. The Ways and Means Committee recommends passage of Senate Bill 5546A.
Further discussion, Representative Kremel.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
She does.
Thank you, Representative. I noticed that on the on page, well, it says one of one, but it's a detail of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Action. It says that the Oregon Military Department is $2 million of other funds, and $750,000 of federal funds are being subtracted, and then going to Department of Administrative Services is $4.1 million. That's a discrepancy of $1.35 million. Where's the other $1.35 million coming from to make up the $4.1 million for this construction project?
Okay, I apologize. These are totally separate funds and separate line items. So the one that we heard in our subcommittee, the Eugene State Office Building renovation, that's coming from a capital construction fund, which is separate from the Oregon Military Department. And that one, the funding is no longer needed. And so the limitation is going away.
Clarification. So the $1.35 million is coming from the Capital Construction Fund?
They're totally separate. Representative, they're totally separate. They just happen to be in the same bill. It's not a subtractive addition issue.
Well, clarification again, Madam Speaker.
Further clarification, does the carrier yield?
Yes.
She does.
We are taking $2.75 million from one agency and moving it into a capital construction fund, and then we're taking $4.1 million out of the capital construction fund and putting it into the Department of Administrative Services for the purposes of the Eugene building, correct?
Madam Speaker, no, that's not correct. It's separate. What we're doing is reducing the limitation in the Department of Military's budget, reducing the limitation. And then $4.1 million is coming out of the Capital Construction Fund. There's no connection between the two. They just happen to be in the same bill.
I was wondering how we got from Military Department to DAS. Further question?
Additional question. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
She does.
Will the Military Department be coming back later saying, well, you know what, we do need the money after all because we do need to... fix our or rebuild our mail distribution center?
Madam Speaker, my understanding from the analyst is they have declined this project, so they will not be coming back asking for more money because they won't be doing the project.
And I have one more question, Madam Speaker.
Final question, does the carrier yield?
I do.
She does.
Thank you, Representative. Item of the Eugene office building was heard in general government, and I was under the impression that there was going to be some more information gathered before a request to give them the 4.1 or 4.5 or however much DAS was asking for to do this office building. Has there then been a decision made, and was the other information that was asked for gathered?
Madam Speaker and Representative, we heard discussion about this issue also in our subcommittee, the Ways and Means Subcommittee on Natural Resources. We heard from the DAS director that the decision, that information had been collected to make the decision. They presented it to us, and it was approved in our subcommittee and in the full Ways and Means.
Then I do have one more question, Madam Speaker. I'm sorry.
Additional question, does the carrier yield?
I will.
She will.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, and thank you, Representative. I'm sorry, your last answer brought up then another question.
I will stop answering then.
And that question is, If I remember correctly from the Department of Administrative Services budget, there was a holding place or there was a holding bill to put this into. Is that bill then being extinguished, or has that holding place within the DAS budget been extinguished and we are expecting not to see it there? I know we've already passed the DAS budget across this floor.
Since I was not in that committee, I will seek some answers.
I understand.
I've been informed the answer is yes, it has been taken out of the DAS budget.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
As you can see, colleagues, this is raising some interesting questions. And I noted that on the on the House side, there was one no vote, and it's one of the representatives from the Eugene area. I also noted that there are, on the Senate side, there were two no votes on this. I think that there needs to be a clearer demarcation of the funds and where they're coming from. We have 1.35, in my estimation, and I may be completely off base on this, and that's okay. The people with the accounting degrees can come and explain it to me later. But in my estimation, we have $1.35 million that's just sort of appeared into the bill without showing where it's coming from. And I have a problem with that because I don't know where those funds are coming from. The other thing that I'm wanting to make sure of is that there was some additional information that was asked for by the General Government Subcommittee on Ways and Means with regards to this particular project. And some of the questions that were being asked by the members that are from the Eugene area. And I think that we want to make sure that this doesn't become a black hole, that we're just sort of throwing money down the hole and expecting to have some kind of a positive results. In the General Government Subcommittee, there were questions about who the anchor tenant was going to be, whether the anchor tenant was going to stay there, whether the anchor tenant would come back after reconstruction was done. There were also questions around the notion of tearing the building down and rebuilding. Now, I think we got away from that in the General Government Subcommittee of getting rid of, or not, we moved away from the notion of tearing the building down, because to tear it down and rebuild, we were looking at, if I remember right, a cost of about $8.5 million versus the $4.1 or $4.2 million to do the remodeling and reconstruction. And the shell of the building is evidently still good and can be used and probably should be used. But I think for me anyway, because I heard this in the General Government Subcommittee of Ways and Means, there are still some unresolved questions. And the biggest one for me is, where's the extra $1.35 million coming from? I would have liked to have seen that in this explanation. For those reasons, I'm going to vote no on this bill, and the rest of you do whatever you want. Thanks.
Further discussion, Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. This bill has several... To the bill. This bill has several unrelated components. I think in large part it would have been fine, but one of the components does trouble me. The funding, over $4 million, for DAS to remodel the state office building in Eugene. I believe the money could be better spent by investing in a shared project for local and state use that would yield a better building with more potential and better service. The state already owns an office building in downtown Eugene. It's old, and it's not a great building. For a while, the state even wanted to get rid of it and offered to sell it to the county. The county couldn't afford to purchase it at the state's asking price. Frankly, it's not worth much as it is, but the site, particularly the location, is desirable. It's adjacent to the county courthouse and principal administrative building, and to Eugene City Hall, and to a major federal building. Instead of selling this building, the state has recently decided to renovate it and move DEQ offices into it. Meanwhile, the county was pitching a different idea during the fall and winter, this winter, to enter into a joint project with the state and the city. Tear down that rundown building and build something new, utilize the space better, and benefiting from shared building systems while maintaining separate spaces and activities. The project in this bill is the culmination of a timing and communication problem. The state and local jurisdictions were simply on different planning schedules. The county's plan was distributed this winter, proposing a new shared project that would cost the state a little more, about $5 million in the document that I received, compared to the state's current plan to spend $4.1 on a remodel. The county's concept would have provided new space for state offices, space for those programs that the state and county partners on, particularly in public safety and human services. And this could have been a step towards solving a critical space problem that the Chief Justice has highlighted in his special report on court facilities. Governments often have overlapping or related missions and responsibilities. The delivery of services, public safety, human services, and other program areas has become collaborative to improve effectiveness and achieve cost efficiencies. There's a growing list of examples where state and/or local agencies share a physical space to provide service to citizens. It's also cost-efficient for the taxpayers, who, of course, whether they are the taxpayers of a city, a county, a special district, or the state, are all the same taxpayers, the very same taxpayers for all of the jurisdictions simultaneously. Every once in a while, an opportunity comes along to do something differently and better and get more for the money. This could have been one of those. Instead of putting this money into an old building, I think it would have been a better idea to put money into a new project to benefit the state and the county and the city and the courts. The reason I'm speaking to this today is just to point out my hope that in the future, the state will continue to work cooperatively and collaboratively with local governments on shared projects, with the dual aim of providing better service to citizens and maximizing the value of our investment to Oregon. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Dingfelder, do you wish to close?
Yes, Madam Speaker, thank you. I just want to clarify for the good representative from Wilsonville once again that the two items that are listed in this bill are not connected. My understanding, and not having been on the subcommittee that actually sent this out, is that there needs to be a separate bill for capital construction projects, and the two happen to just end up in the same vehicle. So again, I just want to emphasize that the what you're seeing with the military department is the need to eliminate an empty limitation that is no longer needed. And then you heard about the facility in Eugene, and that's a separate $4.1 million other funds coming from capital construction funds. And with that, I urge your aye vote. And ask for a call of the House.
Representative Dingfelder requests a call of the House. She is joined by Representative McPherson, Representative Barnhart, Representative Dallum, Representative Reed, and Representative Riley. The doorkeepers will bar the doors, the sergeant-at-arms will attend, and the clerk will call the roll.
Barker, Barnhart, Berger, Beyer, Bonamici, Boone, Boquist, Bruin, Bruin Buckley, Burley, Butler, Cameron, Cannon, Clem, Cowan, Dallum, Dallum Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Flores Galizio, Garrard, Gelzer, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Hanna, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker, not answering. Nobody. Excuse, not subject to the call. Six, Bruin, Gelser, Hunt, Maurer, Nelson, Scott.
All members subject to the call are present. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will vote, open the voting system. Representative Barnhart, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative Cameron, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative Olson, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative Holvey, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Butler, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative Lim, votes no. Representative Gilliam, votes no. Representative Cowan, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Minnis, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Richardson, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative Burley, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative Gerard, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Flores, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative Chris Edwards, votes no. And Representative Nathanson, how do you vote? Votes no. Senate Bill 5546A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Other business of the House? Representative Holvey, you're in the queue. For what purpose do you rise?
Madam Speaker, I'd like to change my vote from yea to nay.
Representative Holvey, the gavel had fallen before you were in the queue.
I'm sorry. Button didn't work.
Other business of the House? Other business of the Senate? Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Colleagues, tomorrow the governor has asked, at the request of the Virginia governor, Timothy Kaine, our governor has asked that we observe a moment of silence tomorrow at 9 a.m., which would be noon Eastern time. And that would be to recognize the shared loss with our fellow citizens in Virginia. Further announcements? Representative Lim.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And I just want to thank you, each members of this chamber, for the tremendous support you have given me during this difficult time on the Virginia Tech massacre. And we'll begin to know more about why it happened. Anyway, as the Madam Speaker announced, tomorrow, 9 o'clock, and I'm going to lay the flowers on the the flag of the Virginia, okay, west side of the wing. I hope you can join me and many others, and I will be contacting governor's office to join us also. So I'm hoping each member of this chamber give me a 1 minute or two at that location. No one is going to speak, just 1 minute of silence or prayers, whatever you want to do, and that will be done to show our respect and to, you know, for the fallen friends and for their families. So 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Thank you very much.
Representative Greg Smith, you're in the queue for announcements. Is this an announcement or a remonstrance?
Remonstrance.
Okay, thank you. Further announcements, Representative Barnhart?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I ask unanimous consent that Representative Cameron be allowed to change his vote on House Bill 5503. It would not change the outcome.
Representative Cameron requests unanimous consent that he be allowed to change his vote on House Bill 5503.
Well, maybe Senate Bill. Yes, thank you.
Senate Bill 5503. It will not affect the outcome. Without objection, so ordered. Representative Cameron, how do you vote? He votes aye. Further announcements? Representative Merkley.
Colleagues, my assistant and right hand, Claire Griffin, is celebrating the anniversary of her 21st birthday. And all of you who would like to step into my office and wish her a happy birthday or a happy anniversary of her birthday, I just wanted to encourage you to do so. Thank you.
Happy birthday to her. Further announcements? Remonstrances. Representative Greg Smith.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, it's with a bit of disappointment that I rise today. I, along with many of my colleagues in this building, feel a little bit disappointed and a little bit deceived, and actually just a little bit misled. And let me tell you, right now, as at the midpoint of this session, antagonism is the last thing we need in this building. Doesn't serve any of us very well. If you'll recall, back in January, on the first day of the 74th legislative session, we were told that there was a new era of leadership. We were told that there was going to be a majority that was committed to openness and bipartisanship. Well, Madam Speaker, colleagues, members of the media, I just don't see it. And you know what? I think we can do better. Now, why the frustration? Why this remonstrance? In this morning's Oregonian, the Democratic leader of this House is quoted as saying, "So far, the Republican leadership doesn't seem interested in providing health care for kids." This couldn't be further from the truth. And you know what? We can do better than this. We ought to do better than this. We're going to be candid. Let's be candid. This session, we have 20% more general fund than we did last session. That's almost $2 billion. Billion with a B. And what have we done with that $2 billion of additional funding, that 20% increase? We've gutted funding for community colleges. We've decimated funding for higher education. We've refused, with our vote and with our actions, to recognize the commitment to our Oregon State Police. And you know what? Senior and disabled citizens, on behalf of the Oregon House of Representatives, I apologize for what we've done to you. Now, colleagues, next to the representative from Douglas County, I've served on the Ways and Means Committee longer than any other member in this building, so I know political strategy. And I know what's going on right now, and I want to share it with you, and I want to share it with the citizens of this state of Oregon. What this chamber's doing is we're bumping up funding in key areas of state government while leaving major holes in other areas. Holes, as I mentioned, in community colleges, in our state police, in higher education, in economic development, in senior and disabled services.
Representative, your time is up. There is no yield on remonstrances.
We can do better.
For the remonstrances, Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I serve on the Human Services Subcommittee of Ways and Means, and there's some things going on down there, and there's some things going on in the process that really break my heart. I was very hopeful that the language that was being spoken of before the session started about this being an open and bipartisan process and the efforts were going to be made to bring parties to the table and talk about policy issues that were important to Oregonians. But I can tell you that I'm very frustrated on that level. Today in the Human Services Subcommittee, there's a work session scheduled on House Bill 2201, which is the Healthy Kids Program. This is a program that's incredibly important to Oregon and incredibly important to the children of Oregon. We were told about the fact that there was going to be some amendments introduced into this bill. We didn't get those amendments until yesterday afternoon. We will have an opportunity, I hope, to discuss this bill along with the other three bills that are scheduled for work session this afternoon. But colleagues, we need more time for the legislature to work on the Healthy Kids Program and to reach a bipartisan compromise on the way that it's funded and what it covers and what it does for Oregon children and families. We know that leadership is negotiating on this issue right now. Why is there a rush to put this bill through the Ways and Means Subcommittee? It's on the agenda for the full Ways and Means Committee meeting tomorrow morning. And why are we attempting to short-circuit the negotiations that are going on right now with leadership? I don't understand that part. We continue to have concerns about House Bill 2201, and those concerns stem around the sustainability of the program. How is it going to work that you've got a declining revenue source going to fund a program that's going to have a double-digit inflationary aspect to it? What are the long-range implications of this? We need to talk about that. We need to talk about how we're going to implement this. Are there enough caregivers in the state of Oregon, particularly in the rural parts of the state, to meet the needs of the families that we sign up for this program? We need to discuss that issue and discuss it very carefully. I'm going to close here, but there are many issues around this, and it is extremely frustrating to see this program rush through without due diligence and without discussing the ramifications. Thank you.
For the remonstrances, Representative Garrard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I, too, serve on the DHS Ways and Means Subcommittee with Representative Morgan and share her concerns. There are serious questions to be answered in regard to House Bill 2201 before it is sent to this House floor. Some of the questions, and part of this bill that perhaps you're not aware of, there's $350,000 in this bill for a finder's fee, $25 a head for every kid you bring into the Healthy Kids program. Is that an effective way to spend taxpayer money? I think we're helping the bounty hunters of America. Are there enough medical providers, especially in rural Oregon, to take care of the kids that we'll be putting on this program? Minnesota is considering Healthy Kids-style legislation. 2 years ago, that legislature considered a bill to fund children's health care through tobacco dollars. Sounding familiar? But they had the foresight not to pass the bill. This session, they are looking to fund children's health care through existing resources. And in Washington State, they were considering legislation to expand access the 38,000 uninsured children, yet the legislation uses general fund dollars to pay for the program. I sincerely hope that bill supporters will address these concerns before this bill is brought to us for a vote. We need more time to get these questions answered.
For the remonstrances, Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Change the topic here. Colleagues, I just want a moment of reflection, and I appreciate your time. In today's version of the Not-So-Weekly Democrat, there's an attempted humor around the food stamp program. The governor is accepting basically the challenge to live on a food stamp budget for, I believe, a week. When I worked at the Oregon Food Bank, we had a program called Walk a Mile where we asked elected leaders to do it for a month. Very often that was very challenging for individuals, especially on a busy schedule. I just want us to remember that there are hundreds of thousands of Oregonians in this state who, if it were not for benefits through the food stamp program, would not have access to food on a regular basis. In most cases, food stamps run out by the third week of the month. That's why the food banks across our state see more business in certain times of the month, because people run out of food stamps. When we talk about people maybe eating moldy food or cheaper meat or, well, you can read the list. I think we should just be reflective of the fact that there are a lot of individuals, children, elders, working families who do not have access to the food they need based on the income they earn, and they are dependent on food stamps, and they are very grateful for them. And we have a lot of work to do in this country and in this state to make sure that every person who's working and has the income does not have to be on this program. But there are, they depend on it, and it is not really a humorous matter. Thank you.
Further remonstrances? Adjournment. Representative Jensen, 10 a.m., Monday, April 23rd, 2007.
Madam Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 10 a.m., Monday, April 23rd, 2007.
Representative Jensen moves the House adjourn until 10 a.m., Monday, April 23rd, 2007. Without objection, the House is adjourned.